or maybe two or three verses at a time. And these are what we call epigrams or common sayings. And most TV commercials are based on one very short, catchy phrase, and they try to hammer that in the short time that they're getting across. And isn't it amazing today? Some companies are so proficient in the advertisement, all they have to do is put two little arches up on a billboard and everybody knows what that stands for. That's how good they are at it. All they have to do is put two arches, exit this, and everybody knows what it is. And if we had that money back in the Bible, you know, we could try to do some of those things for the Lord. But that's not the Lord's methods. The Lord doesn't run an ad campaign to try to get people to trust in Him. He wants voluntary acceptance of Him without all the neon lights coming on the outside to try to get His attention. And the Lord does that for a particular reason. Okay, Proverbs 10, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Okay, a foolish son would obviously meaning foolishness in the sight of his mother. If his mother is a diehard Roman Catholic and her son gets saved and gets off his drugs and gets off his liquor, that causes her a heaviness because she would rather see him on his drugs in the Holy Mother Church than she would see him cleaned up outside the church. So foolishness and her idea is a different mindset. Okay, but a wise son maketh a glad father. There's a cross-reference on that in Proverbs 15:20, which is very, very similar. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish man despiseth his mother. So the first phrase is the same, identical, and the second has a slight variation. Okay, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Doctrinally speaking, I have a cross-reference there at mother, little w, Galatians 4:26, and that says that the Jerusalem, which is above, is the mother of us all. So doctrinally speaking, a wise son maketh a glad holy father, our God, our Father in heaven, but a foolish son makes folks in heaven, New Jerusalem, it causes heaviness to them when they see us down here like that. So that's how you can apply that mother there. You can apply it spiritually, as in your physical mother, or you can apply it, physically, and you can apply it to the heaven itself in New Jerusalem. People, a lot of times children don't realize their wrong actions. They don't realize the emotional heartache that brings a parent that cares. They just don't realize. And a lot of times it shortens the life of the parents because of their heartache. The common thing usually goes when they're small, they stamp on your toes. When they're big, they stamp on your heart. And that's often the case. Okay, verse 2. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. Common saying for that, ill-gotten gain doesn't prosper. Okay, but you've got to look at that from a long-term viewpoint, because ill-gotten gain sure is prospering in America. They say crime don't pay. Oh, I don't know about that. It sure is paying a lot, what I see. Crime does pay. But in the end, the Lord is watching everything. I got a blessing reading Isaiah. Brother Robinson showed this to me, Isaiah 59. And this is a blessing as far as current events in my life. Isaiah Isaiah 59. Now, doctrinally, this passage is very strong in the tribulation. But Isaiah 59, verse 9, therefore is judgment far from us, neither doth justice overtake us. Okay, so they're looking for judgment and justice is not coming. And then if you drop down to verse 14, and judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. You know, that heretical song, the battle hymn of the Republic, his truth is marching on. It ain't marching on now. Truth is in the streets, according to that. And when truth is in the streets, there can be no equity, there can be no fairness, no equality, none whatsoever. And what happens when it gets like that and you try to do right? Verse 15, yea, truth faileth, and he that departeth from evil, he departs from the wrong crowd, the unlawful crowd. What does he do? He maketh himself a prey. They're going to prey on that person. Who? The ones who are the unlawful ones in the structure of the court system will make a prey on the ones who are trying to depart from the evil of injustice. They'll do all they can to go after them. But here, look at this. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. Displeased the Lord. Okay, in Proverbs 10, verse 2, treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. Now, in that one, I put the cross-reference Romans 10, and that would be a decent cross-reference for spiritual application. Righteousness, the righteousness of Jesus Christ, Romans 10, 1 through 4, delivereth us from spiritual death. Now, that's a great cross-reference. But doctrinally, for Proverbs, probably a better cross-reference would be, and this is how we continue to improve our reference Bibles, is that you can throw in there Ezekiel 18, verse 24, where the righteousness of the saint in the tribulation will deliver him from death, where they're working under a faith and work system. So either route you can run with that. Righteousness delivereth from death. Okay, these pretty self-explanatory. Just keep going down through them. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. Okay, cross-reference on that is Psalms 37, verse 25. Psalm 37:25. I have been young and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. Okay, now the word righteous, the definition for righteous is an Old Testament definition. Generally speaking, the Bible wouldn't refer to us as righteous because the righteousness that we have is the righteousness of Jesus Christ. But in the Old Testament, they would have part of their own personal righteousness, so they can call them righteous. As in Lot, he was called a righteous man, even though in the same verse it said that he vexed his righteous soul with their evil deeds. Okay, so the word righteous often has a definition for the Old Testament or the tribulation. Okay, the Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous. Notice his soul of the righteous to famish. A famine, 3.5 year famine, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now, there's a very practical thing. This is being ambitious, working hard. This is having intuition and having, initiative, that's the word I wanted, to be initiative about things, to think ahead, to plan ahead, and to work hard. People don't know how to work hard nowadays. You know, working hard is not, walking I'll get it for you. You know how fast you can go. I remember when we'd be working on something in the farm, Dad would say, run and get a wrench. I ran. I sprinted because he said run. And besides, as he's sitting there, go get the wrench, get the wrench. I know he's sitting there waiting for me to hold the thing up. And it just bugs me to no end when I know somebody's waiting for me. And so I don't know if it was because of that I had to run and get it, you know, and then and there were a few times, you know, I couldn't find the stupid thing. And then here he walks into the barn, picks it off the fence. You know, I was looking high, I was looking low, looking everywhere but the simple place, but there it was. Okay, but we were told to run to get stuff. That's being diligent. It says in Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. People nowadays are just not ambitious about things. They don't work hard. They don't work fast. Now, there's got to be a balance between quantity and quality. You know, American factories like quantity. Push it out, push it out, push it out. And quality stinks. Now, you can still be diligent and get the job done, get it done right, but be quick about it. And so notice it's the diligent that maketh rich. He creates wealth by being diligent. And a boss ought to be happy when a Christian hires him because he's going to work hard for him. But often not isn't the case. So a slack hand is a lazy hand, laziness. And you see, here's the problem people face, especially in the city. In the city, okay, if you're going to have parents who are going to try to get their kids to work hard, it's not too hard to teach the young ladies how to work hard in the city because they can do the housework and stuff. What are you going to teach the boy? Oh, take out the trash. Yeah, once a week. You're going to have to figure out something for the boys. A lot of times what you're finding out in the cities now, the girls are the ones working and the boys are out playing. And they don't have any character to them. And that's why the boys have no character to them, and they'll take off, they'll tell a girl he loves her, and then all of a sudden a baby comes along and off he goes. And then who's got to do all the work? She does. Or she dumps the baby on her mother. And now a grandmother's raising a kid. Now you're seeing that all across this country too. Why? Because the older generation knows how to work. We have all these easy, time-saving devices, but yet we don't have any time to work. And so the old days, teaching people how to work, you just can't imagine the work people put into things in the old days. Like on the farm, you put in tile. There's a laser machine. You got a big machine, and you just put in tile. In the old days, when they put in tile, they dug it by hand, 3 feet, 4 feet down, all by hand, and no doubt it was in clay half the time, you know, instead of that sand. If people's digging in sand, if they've never dug in clay, they don't know what digging with a shovel is. And you learn that you got to have a shovel that's scoured real well. And you learn what those little tricks are. Okay, but as far as these things, just working hard, being diligent about things. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Okay, Proverbs 21, verse 5 is a cross-reference on that. Working hard. Work is not a dirty word. It's a good word. Teach young people to enjoy work. Proverbs 21:5, the thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that is hasty only to want. Okay, so we need to teach them to work hard. Okay, Proverbs 10:5, he that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causes shame. The common saying for that is make hay while the sun shines. Work hard at it. When the harvest is out there, you can't be dilly-dallying around. You got to get with the program. I remember, you know, as a kid, I remember one year the fall harvest was so bad, that we had so much rain that the only time we'd get the crops out, the beans, was it did freeze through the night. It would freeze from like midnight to 5 or 6 or something like that. Fortunately, I was in school at that time, so I didn't have to help. But I can remember Dad and Ronnie getting up, going out and working, harvesting them beans on frozen ground, on frozen water, from midnight to 6. And then they'd have to quit because they'd get too wet. It'd thaw out when the sun would come out. And that's working when you can. Harvest when you can. Now, spiritually, how can we apply this? Okay, he that gathereth in the summer is a wise son. That's in season and out of season. That's when you're seeing souls saved. Gathering in the summer, that's when things are moving. Okay, but he that sleepeth in harvest, what kind of a harvest is he talking about? Spiritual harvest. You can say a spiritual harvest there. The cross-reference there runs into Matthew 9, where that passage says that you ought to pray ye therefore to the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers in the harvest because the fields are white on the harvest. Now, how is a Christian sleeping? He's sleeping on the job. Sleeping at the switch. He's not awake. He's not alert. He's not looking for souls out there. He's not ready for souls. Was it Monday night or Tuesday night? I forgot what it was. Let me play that game, Jim. Was it Monday night and Tuesday night? Tuesday night I had a softball game, like a tournament situation. And our team should have won, and another kind of made a different difficult call, and it probably cost the game for us, but who cares? Because in the end, the Lord had different plans. Now, if we would have won that game, I would have had to wait one game and then play the second game later that night. But because we lost, I went over to the county fair by our booth. And when we were getting ready to leave, I was by the Jeep getting ready to leave, two people walked up and I got talking to them and got to see two people saved. Now, if we had won that ball game, I wouldn't have saw that. And so that was a blessing. Okay, because there was a harvest there that was wanting to be harvested. And we got to be alert to these things. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causes shame to his father, causes shame to heaven, causes shame to himself, causes shame to the lost soul. Okay, blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Okay, the mouth of the wicked is covered by violence, but that doesn't necessarily mean that their voice will be mean, yelling, screaming. Violence comes out of their mouth, even though they may say it softly, or they may just say it kindly, but violence is still coming out of their mouth. Now, the violence you'll see in this is illustrated once in Esther 7, verse 8, with Mordecai. He was a wicked man, and what came out of his mouth was a law that was designed to kill all the Jews in Persia. Violence came out of his mouth. Now, he himself didn't get on the street corner and start yelling and screaming and say, "Death to all Jews, death to all Jews." He didn't say that. All he did was he got a law very privately passed that all Jews should be killed. That's violence. Esther 7:8. That would be Haman. Haman is a type of the Antichrist. Okay, another one is Psalms 55, verse 21. That would be the Antichrist himself. Violence covereth his mouth. Now, he won't get out there in the streets and proclaim death to everybody, because if he did that, that would let the cat out of the bag. So they get these, pass these laws privately. Okay, so Psalms 55, verse 21. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. See, that's what he's talking about. His words were softer than oil, yet were they drawn swords. So that's what that proverb is talking about. Violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Now you'll see that phrase again down in verse 11. But violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. It's repeating it. But blessings are upon the head of the just. The opposite of that, cursings would be on the head of the wicked. Okay, so you have violence there, covereth the mouth of the wicked. Now, they may be a smooth talker, but violence is still covering their mouth. Now, verse 7. Verse 7 is one of those verses that shows the inherent conscience of all people, especially parents. It shows our conscience. The memory of the just is blessed. Now, you may think, well, man, I got a bad memory. So, but the idea here, as you read it, it's the memory of you remembering that person. People's memory of you. How do we know that? The rest of the verse shows that. The memory of the just are blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Now, here's this right here is a scientific experiment that you could show man's conscience. What parent or parents, when they give birth to a little boy in America, is going to call that little boy Benedict, as in Benedict Arnold? Samson. Or who's going to name their little boy Judas? Does anybody know a little boy named Judas? Anybody? Does anybody know a boy named Ishmael? Does anybody know a boy named Nero? Name of the wicked shall rot. Does anybody know a boy named Saul? S-A-U-L. Why don't they pick these names? Does anybody know a boy named Esau? How about Cain? Okay, we got a couple hands, because we do know one boy named Cain. I know more named Abel, though. Think you know one? One Ishmael? How about Nimrod? Usually you call somebody that name. Okay, Herod, Demas. Okay, does anybody know anybody by the name of Abel? Anybody know any Abels? Okay, we got some Abels. How about Seth? I got more of that one. Abraham. See why? The memory of the just is blessed. The name of the wicked shall rot. Anybody know any girls named Jezebel? I know that guy, yeah. Now, right there is a scientific proof you can show somebody. Parents do not want to name. Here's another example. Black people, by a subconscious admission, do not think much of Martin Luther King, even though they say it. How many know any black boys named Martin? One. Why don't they call their boys Martin after Martin Luther King? Now, they have a greater regard for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and I know a lot of black boys named Frank. Now, there's something about that that's kind of strange. Now, Martin's real name, Martin Luther King, was Michael. So that was his real name. Okay, but if Martin Luther King is really their hero, why don't they name their children after him? That's a kind of a weird thing. I haven't figured that thing out yet. Okay, so you have all these names. Okay, in the bottom on the footnote on this, I've got all these names. And you'll see these are names, and of course, this is the exception proves the rule. Now, the news media and science have a goofy idea, is that they say the exception overthrows the rule. But that's not even logical. The exception proves the rule. And so what the news media always tries to do is they try to find some woman who's stronger than a man and then say, see, look at here, women are equal with men. No, the exception proves the rule. If we put 100 women on one side of the room and 100 men on the other side of the room, if they have a knockdown, drag-out fight, I would certainly hope the men win every time. If they don't, then I'd hope the women would shoot them. Make the world a better place. Okay, so what are they trying to do? In sports, generally speaking, what race is the majority race of tennis? It's white men. Or golf. Golf is white men, usually. And that's why they glorify, oh, what's his name? Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, yeah. But he had a black father and an Oriental mother. You see, and same with hockey. Hockey's more of a white man's sport. Okay, but basketball, obviously, the blacks can play basketball better than whites. But yet a white man will go to a black man game, but you don't see too many blacks going to a white man game. And that is just observation you could see scientifically. You could see it. You could find out who's really biased. Now, in baseball, who's really becoming a dominant figure in baseball? The Hispanics are. They play in baseball year-round down there and getting very good. And you're starting to see them make a big inroad in baseball. Okay, so in verse 7, the name of the wicked shall rot. Name of the wicked shall rot. Verse 8, what the wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. Self-explanatory. A wise man is willing to listen. You're a teacher part of the time, but a student all the time. A wise heart. The wise in heart will receive commandments. Acts 17, verse 11, they will receive the word of God. Verse 9, he that walketh uprightly walketh surely, but he that perverteth his ways shall be known. Okay, perverting of ways, I've got a cross-reference to Jeremiah 23:36, and that's talking about them perverting the words of the living God. Okay, 10, he that winketh with the eye causeth sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall. So there you got prating fool twice. Now the prating fool there, I put a cross-reference to Zechariah 11, and that is the cross-reference to the Antichrist, the idol shepherd, and he will fall. Okay, but the idea of winking with the eye causes sorrow. Winking, flirting, causes sorrow, causes emotional distress and sorrow. The winking of the eye, when you get into the evil eye, you're getting into the secret societies, and it causes sorrow. That's self-explanatory. Flirting and things like that, all they're thinking about is their own self-pleasure. They're not looking long-term down the road. Never, never sacrifice the future upon the altar of the immediate. Never, never be in a hurry to tie something that you should not, that you should never untie. And that's why when young people, you know, get in their 15, 16, 17, 20, 21, 22, they need to have a very, very close relationship with their parents. And that have already gone down this path, we need to help them through it. Help them not to suffer the many heartaches that are all across this country because of the terrible mistakes that are made in those ages. Okay, so he that winketh the eye causes sorrow. Verse 11, the mouth of a righteous man is a well of life. So he speaks the words of God. The cross reference there is John 7, and the well of life here is a man who is filled with the Spirit of God. John 7, verse 37. John 7:37. In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the Scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. But this spake he of the Spirit, which they that believe on him should receive, for the Holy Ghost was not yet given, because that Jesus was not yet glorified. So the Spirit of God is referred to as rivers of living water. So our words should spring out of our mouth. But yet we, Proverbs 20, verse 5, even though we may know the answer for a lot of things, we need to keep this in mind. Proverbs 20, verse 5, it says, counsel in the heart of man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. And there's a common saying that kind of goes with that, and it's unsought advice is seldom followed and usually resented. And so a person needs to try to be available, and when asked, give them the answers. Help them out with the answers. So the mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Hatred stirreth up strife, but love covereth all sins. Hatred stirreth up strife. Now, the love covereth all sins is a cross-reference to 1 Peter 4:8, where that one, Peter wrote down that charity covereth a multitude of sins. Hatred stirreth up strife. It's amazing to me how two people, especially fundamental Baptists, can agree 9 out of 10 times. But when somebody has a hatred in their heart, they'll keep picking on that one disagreement. They can't let that one alone. It'd be like if they came to your house and they had all this nice food in front of them and they ate what they liked, but there was one thing they didn't like, and when they left, they just kept telling you, boy, that one thing was just horrible. It was terrible. Boy, I just can't believe you made that. Well, what would you want to do? You'd want to take that one item and stick it in their ear or stick it up their nose. You'd like to do something with it. Instead of them saying, thank you for the great meal, the 9 out of 10, you know, oh, yeah, I wouldn't even mention the one. Why do you have to mention it? Now, there are times, you know, especially if that one area is a real heresy, and we can do something about it and try to help them out. But it's amazing to me. Brother Robinson and I were talking Tuesday night a little bit, and he said that he had a good friend that believed he could lose his salvation. And, of course, he doesn't believe he can lose it. And he said they had time and time again discussions about that, arguments about it, trying to get this verse, trying to get that verse, back and forth, back and forth. And it finally got to the end. Both of them just looked at each other and said, well, I'm not convincing you. You're not convincing me. I guess someday the Lord is going to have to show us both. One of us is right and one of us is wrong. But until then, we're still friends. And this guy said to him, he said, maybe it is that maybe you're right. And he said, but I don't see it. When he said to Brother Robert, he said, maybe you're right about eternal security, but I don't see it. And maybe God has given me the light he's given me because I couldn't handle what you got if I had it anyway. And then he said, well, I don't know about that. Maybe so. I don't know. Why is it that the Lord reveals some light to some folks and other people he don't reveal it to? And I do realize that in many cases it's because of a deceived heart. But there are some cases where the Lord just says, I want somebody staying in that mess just to try to help somebody else out. Does the Lord do stuff like that? I would dare think so. For example, you had Obadiah and Ahab. Obadiah worked under Ahab's authority, and here comes Elijah. Now, Obadiah said, I helped out 100 people, helped them in caves, put them in caves, and helped them survive. Now, if he wasn't in that position, could have he helped them? No. Who would have helped them? I don't know. Would have they had help? I don't know. Was Obadiah wrong in his position? I don't know. Doesn't really say. I bet you there's two disciples that had interesting discussions all the time. Matthew the publican and Simon the zealot. Now if you know about those two, Simon the zealot would be a militia type, a patriot type, who would say Israel has no right, they shouldn't be under Rome, and he would fight to death for that one. But Matthew was the publican, was a guy who was in the system, you know, a conservative publican, but yet when he got saved, he got out of the system. And I bet you he still had ideas how he could fix the system. I bet you those two had interesting discussions. And it's just where God places a man. But somebody who has hatred in their heart, they're always going to stir up that area. It's amazing to me that I can sit down with a Calvinist and learn from him. I can sit down with a J.W. and learn something from him. I can sit with a Mormon and learn something from him. Now, they certainly can't learn anything from me. But I can get something from them. Most of the time, it's not much. And sometimes what I get from them is, boy, they're a real ding-a-ling, aren't they? But I can learn from them. An example of that is Ron Wyatt. Now, when we had him, most of us picked up that he was off in some of his doctrine. And when he asked me to teach on the King James Bible in the bus, he was so thrilled about what I said that he wanted me to start talking more about the mark of the beast and don't take the mark of the beast. And I knew where he was heading. He was afraid that he was going to go into tribulation, and he was afraid he was going to take the mark of the beast. And I wasn't even worried about that. And I just smiled and said, I think we've given him enough information right now. Now, why didn't I just tell him he was dead wrong about that? He wouldn't listen anyway. He said, well, you should have told him anyway. He found out now anyway. Yeah. And he didn't have to worry about it anyway. You say, but is there times you should say something? Yeah, there's times, and make sure the Lord opens the door. But you see, I had the ability to learn from him, and I learned a lot of great things from him, and I'm glad I did. Could he learn from me? Well, at that stage of his life, I kind of doubt it. Unless he voluntarily decided to. But he was in such a teaching mode. A person has to really realize that when you're in a teaching mode, you've got to always be prepared to be on a listening mode. Always be a student. Okay, so hatred stirreth up strife, but love covereth covereth all sins. Isn't that interesting? Love covereth all sins. Now, that doesn't justify covering up sin, because you have places in the Bible where we are to address it and we are to rebuke it. So you have to figure out what's he talking about. 1 Peter 4, verse 8, charity covereth a multitude of sins. 1 Corinthians 13, 7, charity rejoiceth in the truth. Charity rejoiceth not in iniquity. So where do you draw the lines in these things? Between you and the Lord, you've got to figure it out. And the Lord will give you clear direction if your heart is sincere and you're trying to figure it out. Verse 13, in the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found. So you can see that wisdom comes first. But a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Now that rod for the back of him, you're getting into more so the corporal punishment, but punishment from government structures, rod for the back, where, was it, Deuteronomy talks about giving many stripes on a man. Okay, so there's two boys down south, and I don't have the complete story about this, and I'm still kind of wondering about it. But there's a pastor down south, and evidently when he spanked his children, he didn't do just the rump, he went all the way up the back, which I think is foolish. But that's what he did. And he taught his boys the same. His boys grew up, one is the pastor of the Spanish church down there, and I guess they had a little boy that was naughty, and they disciplined him. And they hit him on the back. And it went the whole gamut. And one got 26 years, and the other, I think, got 14 years. It was up there. Now, if they would have murdered the little fellow, they probably got less time. And there's a sign-up sheet all over, you know, going all across the country trying to get this sentence shortened and all that stuff. But you see, I'm real leery about those things because I don't know what's going on. You say, well, he said and he said and he said, yeah, but that's three hearsays. And so you got to be very cautious about these things. And if anybody's going to spank children, it best be your own. And in this day and age, you shouldn't lay a hand on anybody. Nobody. Zippo. You know, as far as dealing with anybody, obviously in a church, you know, shaking hands, somebody offers a hand, that's one thing. But whenever you get around public officials or police officers, you don't lay a hand on their shoulder. You don't touch anybody. Why? Because you laying your gentle hand on their shoulder can be interpreted as assault. And they'll come around and whop you and say, you assaulted a police officer, and they'll beat you down just like that, just because you may have put your hand. Now, officer, what about this? Just like that, and all of a sudden, boom. And you do that to the wrong guy. You don't touch anybody. And you don't let anybody touch you. No officer should ever touch you. And as soon as they touch your person, your body, anywhere, you say, you've just assaulted me. If you do it again, I'm going to charge you. And boy, they'll back off like this because you know what you're talking about. And so the thing is a person has to know the law. But this idea about, you know, you say, well, I'm trying to help somebody else's children out. Let them deal with it. It isn't worth your family going through a bunch of heartache because you're trying to help some lazy parents' kids out. Take care of your own kids. And let them take care of their own. You say they're brats. Okay, then give them Train Up a Child. You give them that book. Okay, and so the rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Wise men lay up knowledge. Look at that. Wise men lay up knowledge. Continue to study. Continue to study. Never quit studying. They lay up knowledge, trying to learn at all times. But the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Why does he say the mouth of the foolish? The opposite. There's an opposite in that passage. Wise men lay up knowledge, but they don't talk a whole lot. The mouth of the foolish is always running, and he's not saying anything. The fool is known by a multitude of words, Ecclesiastes 5:3. A man of knowledge spareth his words, it says in Proverbs 17:27. So in verse 14, we want to lay up knowledge, get knowledge, study, read, always doing something. You don't gain knowledge from the television. I mean, knowledge today is attained by reading. And people don't like to read. And so you read, and you read, and you continue to read. And a lot of times the reading will become from, you know, old paperback books and things like that. Because people don't have the money to put out the fancy stuff. Okay, 14, 15. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Wealth buyeth many friends. Common saying for 15, he is counting on his money to take care of them. Yeah, a lot of times it does. But rich people have they have a problem in life. Rich people never know who their real friends are. They don't know who their friends are. And the only way they're going to find out their real friends is to lose all of it. And their friends will stick with them. 16, the labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin, self-explanatory. He is in the way of life that keepeth instruction. Notice, the way of life that keepeth instruction, but he that refuseth reproof erreth. He that refuseth reproof, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof. Refusing the words of God, erreth. Jesus said, ye do err. Not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. Matthew 22:29. Now you can see I don't have cross references on those, but man, where do you draw the line on this stuff? You can see I got that middle margin already filled up. And I can throw more in there, but man, it'd be trying to get that font size. That's why we got the wide margins on the sides so we can add some more. So I think that tape's about ready to go. About ready to go, Jerry? Hey, Jerry back there. Is the tape about done?
No.
Okay. Couple more minutes. Yeah, we'll stop at 17 anyway. That's about halfway. Any questions, comments? Matthew 22:29. Yes, sir? Proverbs 17:27-28. If you purchased Bibles that came in, if you didn't get it before church, so we got them in, see Brother Garcia over there. Praise the Lord. Okay, how about prayer requests? People have prayer requests? Brother Larry? Okay. Brother Paul? Okay. Okay, Eddie?